Welcome to The Deadline. I'm Laura, your host and founder of the New Jersey Ghost Hunter Society. Here it is, another week in Podcastville. How are you, Brian?
I'm doing well. And yourself?
Pretty good. Pretty good. Still getting over the remnants here of this lovely upper respiratory infection deal, but...
Better you than me.
Yeah. Hey, you know what? I would take this over a migraine any day, though.
I don't get those either.
You're lucky. You're like the picture of health. It's sickening, no?
Strong like bull.
Yes. Oh, God. Well, hopefully you'll be strong like bull come July, because we have a lot of work to do for Ghost World Conference.
It depends if there's brownies available.
There'll be brownies. I'll make you some brownies. Didn't I make you brownies for the all-nighter investigation?
Yes, she did.
And you liked them, right?
I loved them.
Okay, good. So,
kidding, I was cursing on the way home that...
I gave some to Ron.
Ron took a bigger batch than I got.
No, actually, he didn't. I gave him like 14, you know, a dozen and plus two for good luck, you know. So.
And how many did I get?
You had definitely 14, if not more.
I should have gotten double that amount.
Oh, jeez. But yeah, I'll make some brownies and... But yeah, I know we got a lot of work to do. I have to find out about getting some more of the New Jersey Ghost Hunter t-shirts made, have on sale at the booth. And we should probably do another, you know how you did those nice CDs of our early crappy shows? Maybe you should make some CDs of the more, like
the recent
crappy shows. We can have those on sale at the booth too. And, you know, I should get more bumper stickers and stuff. Well, I have bumper stickers left over. They don't sell that much anyway, but, you know. Mm. But yeah, we'll have.
Oh yeah, we could sell your book too.
Oh, the promissory note of the book, you know. Actually, though, I have been getting more work done on it. Shock of all shocks!
You know, and what, 3 pages?
No, I've got more. No, I got like 3 or 4 chapters. Are you kidding? I've got stuff done, and I've been doing more work. And I've even like kind of sketched out in Photoshop, like sort of like a book cover. For it, just so I could print it out, and I put it on my vision board, so I have to keep walking past this in my bedroom. Every time I come in and out of the bedroom, I'm looking at it, and it's been working. It's been helping me to say, you know what, I gotta write some more. So it's...
Laura puts a book cover. Most women usually put like a bikini or something up there.
Yeah, is there inspiration? Nah, you know. I'll forget wearing a bikini. Did I ever tell you about that? When I was a kid and I got attacked by the giant jellyfish when we lived in Florida?
No.
Yeah, I have this crummy little, like, excuse me, like, not like a scar, but where the damn thing latched onto me was like one of those Man of War things, you know, how they, and it burns.
Right.
And I mean, like, you have never experienced such a stinging, burning thing. I felt something kind of graze by me. I thought it grazed by, and I came out of the water because I was screaming, and it was stuck on me. Okay, it was on this side. And the lifeguards came running, and my friends were all screaming. And it was a class trip because we lived in Florida. And, I mean, it was no big deal to just pack up the whole class and go to the beach, you know?
Oh, yeah.
Like, yeah.
No big deal.
So... The lifeguards were afraid to touch it, so they start grabbing big seashells, and they're taking seashells and scraping me to scrape this thing off of me. Of course, most of my flesh comes off with it, too, and they call, and they get medics out there, and they're putting like all kinds of stuff on it and treating it. Well, to this day, I never got the pigment in my skin back in where the damn thing was. So I always had this ugly little patch of, like, extra white. And I mean, yeah, I'm white, but... This is like no pigment ever came back to where the main tentacle stung me. So, and I never wore a bikini since. I always blame it. Like, see, if I'd had a one piece, that thing wouldn't have been able to get on me the way it did. And you know, and now I can never wear a one piece again because I'm self conscious about the loss of pigment spot on my belly there. So.
Oh, this is Jacques Cousteau.
See, it's not just ghost hunting that's frightening. It's the friggin' ocean. The ocean is scary. I mean,
at least it wasn't a stingray.
Yeah, I mean, but oh, those things are horrible. Those jelly, and to this day, like when you go to the Jersey Shore, and sometimes like when there's been a big storm out at sea, a lot more jellyfish come in closer to the beach and stuff, and they're gross looking, but they're just like little blobs of jelly. I'm like, you know nothing till you have seen one of these friggin' things with tentacles, you know.
Boy, crikey.
Oh, God. And yet, even these little blobs of jelly scare me half to death. I'm like, you know what? I don't know why people are so fascinated with the ocean and going to the beach. I'm like, first of all, you walk on the sand, and you're dodging all kinds of, like, whether it's syringes and leftover tampon casings and stuff. Gross. Then you find your postage stamp size worth of sand to put your little beach towel on. And then you got to go wade in the sewage. Because people, that's all that's left in the ocean is sewage. Between all the oil spills, all the pollution. You know, and not for nothing, but even if none of that happened, fish live in there. Fish got to poop just like every other creature. So you're still, you know?
Yes, and we're here to perk up your day.
You know, and my first ex-husband always used to say, but the ocean is always moving, Laura. It's cleaner than a pool because it's always moving. I'm like, uh-uh. I can go into a pool and I can look. I don't have to get in the pool. I can stand on the edge of the pool and see right to the bottom. I know dang well if there's even a hair floating in it, you can see it because the water's so clean, right?
This is the blonde hair.
Well, they sparkle. But, you know, but the ocean is just like, ew. I mean, it's just murky, smelly water. You know, I just, ugh.
Maybe you go to the wrong beaches.
Yeah, I'm sure if I could afford to go to the Caribbean or somewhere where you could see to the bottom of. I've heard there are places like out in Tahiti and Fiji, you can see right to the bottom. It's pristine and beautiful. I could deal with that. But, you know, still, I mean, we're talking the Jersey Shore. It's like, oh, it's just a sewage plant with waves.
Yeah. All right.
Sorry. I know. I'm going to get a letter from the governor saying, you know, you're not helping our tourism here, Laura. You know? But anyway, you know. I mean, it's one thing, like, as a ghost investigator and you're going into a haunted house, supposed haunted house, you're there to determine if, in fact, it's haunted. And that has a thrill scare to it. But the ocean, for me, is just
a scare.
Oh, my God, God. Even being on boats now, I can't handle anymore. You know, I look out and I'm thinking, man, if this sucker goes down, and I can't swim. So right there.
Don't worry about that with everything.
What?
If I get on a plane, if I get in a car, if I walk down the street.
If you get on a plane and it crashes, you are dead. No questions asked. I mean, and it happens so fast. Oh, wow. You know, you get in the car, that's kind of gross because sometimes you don't really die right away. And
okay, so what about a boat?
But a boat, even when it's not doing anything hazardous, it's just there. And when I'm on it, I feel it moving.
Well, yeah.
It rocks. And
it's supposed to.
Oh, my God. And that makes me so sick.
Oh, that puts me to sleep.
Ugh. Can't take
it. Nothing better than being on a boat.
And then I go to the edge of the boat and I'll hang onto the rail to kind of look out. And all I see is water.
Well,
which spells death for Laura because she can't swim. So I'm like, oh, my God.
I have rafts.
Yeah, I know.
And it usually takes quite a bit of time for the boat to go down.
Did I ever tell you about how, speaking of water.
Oh, jeez.
And near-death experiences. Years ago, my friend Larry, true to his Gemini form, I don't know if any of you out there know astrology, but Geminis are famous for being very charismatic and being very capable of talking you into anything. No matter how many times you swear up one side and down the friggin' other that you'll never do this, a Gemini can come along and there you are doing it. Well, this is what happened. He calls me up one day at work and says, so what are you, Ray? And I laugh. I'm like, no, we've been friends for years at that point, mind you. I mean, I've known this guy, God bless his heart, since we were 15. We're still friends to this day.
A long time ago.
Yeah.
Really?
Really? Oh, come on. So anyway, he goes, how much do you weigh, Laura? And I'm like, Larry, come on, that's not something you ask a girl. He goes, no, seriously, what do you weigh? And I'm like, so I tell him.
Well,
at the time, it was 124.
And now?
What do you mean, and now? I'm not 124 anymore, and I highly doubt I will ever see a size 6 again in my long-lived days here. Anyway, so I told him, and I hear this click, 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 click. He's banging away on a calculator, and all of a sudden I hear him saying, that would work. That would work. And I'm like, hello, what are you doing? He goes, listen, I bought a wet bike. And I'm like, that's nice. And he goes, and all my friends weigh too much, and I've been trying to get it where I could have two people on the bike. And he said, but I figured out, calculating-wise, that's why it doesn't work. We can't get the bike up to float because they weigh too much. But your weight would work. You provide the perfect amount of balance, and you could hang on, and I could finally do it and have two people on the bike. Excuse me. And I'm like, yes, but Larry, you're forgetting one critical little thing. He's like, what? And I'm like, I can't swim. Oh, well, I have a life jacket. I'll throw that on you. I'm like, no. I'm not big on the water. I don't like stuff like that. I can't swim. Damn if I wasn't the next day standing knee-deep in Lake Pacon while he's slapping a life preserver on me. And sure enough, he's like, all right, I'm going to start up the bike. Now, what I need you to do is wade, and when I give you the signal, jump as hard as you can and land on top of the bike on back of me and hold on. I'm like, are you insane? He's like, you can do it, Laura. I'm like, oh, my God. We try to do it the first time. I jump, but the bike just tips over, and we both go in the water. He's like, he gets the bike back up. He's like, come on, let's try it again. I don't know how he did it, Brian, but he was revving it, and I landed, and I literally had enough time to throw my arms around his waist, boom, and that thing took off. Well, we were pounding. I don't know if you've ever been on a wet bike.
Is that like a jet ski?
It's more motorcycle-y than a jet ski, but yeah, kind of okay. Like a jet ski.
I've never heard of a wet bike before.
Yeah, it's called a wet bike, and let me tell you.
Is that like a wet back?
No, stop. So, I've been on motorcycles at that point with Larry. I have had him take me on his dirt bike and go off-roading where I came out and I had half of, you know, the redwood forest stuck in my hair from all the twins in me, because when he goes off-road, he really goes off-road. I've been through it all with this guy. But when you're on a wet bike and it's hitting the
waves
and the water, it's kaboom, kaboom. Well, it's pounding so hard that my ribs are literally smacking into my hip bones. So every time we slam down, I'm crunching bone upon bone, because mind you, I'm only 124 pounds at that point, so it was very easy for my bones to smack each other.
Unlike now.
Yeah, I have cushioning now. I'm like a little Michelin baby here. But so long story short, we did it. We brought the bike back to the slip. We jumped off. He was jumping for joy. He was so ecstatic. He had done it. And wasn't that fun? It was fun. I survived. Well, the next day I walk into work. I should say hobbled into work. I'm walking like an old lady all crunched over because I've got bruises. You should have seen everywhere that bike where I was smacking. I was not lying. I was all bruised. I'm holding my ribs. I'm walking in. And my one friend goes, what happened to you? I was like, I was on a wet bike yesterday. She's like, wow, I didn't know you do that. I'm like, I don't. But anyway, so that was the last big adventure Laura had on the high seas there with Lake Apacon.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. So anyway, let's get to the meeting announcements. Less scary stuff here for all us landlubbers. March 29th is the Northeastern Division of the New Jersey Eco Center Society meeting. That's at the Bogota Recreation Center, located at 162 West Main Street in Bogota, headed up by Laura Lindemann, team leader of the Northeast Division. After that, we have April 4th at the Hazlitt Library, the Central Jersey Division, headed up by Gregory and Sherry Irish. The Hazlitt Library is located at 251 Middle Road in Hazlitt. And then we have the Northwest Division that I head up on April 17th at 293 Main Street in the Community Center's Blue Room. All meetings start at 7 o'clock and end at 8:30 and are free and open to the public to attend. So come on out, bring a buddy, bring a friend, bring a relative, bring the ghost pictures or EVPs that you suspect, and we'll check them out. See you at the meeting. Hey, we have a new contest. Now's your chance to win admission to the Ghost World Conference. You can attend the Ghost World Conference in July at Gettysburg, Pennsylvania. All you have to do is record yourself telling or reading your favorite ghost story or experience. This can be from a published work or from one of your own investigations. Now, you can be as dramatic and creative as you want. In fact, the more the better. We're not looking for the humdrum read here, people. Come on, it's a podcast after all. We need the story to come alive for the listeners. listeners. You're not allowed to make up a ghost story or experience. Again, you can tell one that you sincerely experienced or one that is published in a book or article somewhere that you claim is your favorite of all time. Don't worry if we receive the same story from more than one person. Again, your creative and dramatic approach to the telling of the story is what will win you the votes. That's right, votes. In keeping with the American Idol approach, we will let our listeners decide on whose story and its telling is the best, and therefore who deserves to go to Ghost World Conference. Submit your recording no later than May 15, 2072, the deadline, at njghs.net. If the file is too big to email, then burn it off to a CD and snail mail it to The Deadline, P.O. Box 8018, Parsippany, New Jersey, 07054. Brian and I will review these recordings and play them on the show as well. We will narrow it down to the top five and place those recordings on the deadline page of the NJGHS website for voting. The voting will be from June 1st to 15th, and the winner announced on the June 22nd podcast. In addition to admission to the Ghost World Conference, the winner will receive an NJGHS gift basket, including a bumper sticker, t-shirt, baseball hat, and an autographed copy of The Ghosts of Gettysburg by Mark Nesbitt. Winner is responsible for all costs. This is including travel, lodging, meals, expenses incurred while at the conference. Basically, we get you there, people. That's it. Okay. A room will be held at the Ghost World Conference rate of $119 at the Wyndham Gateway Gettysburg, but the winner is responsible for payment of this cost. Even if you have already registered for the conference, you may enter this contest. If you win, your registration fee will be refunded to you by the NJGHS, and you will get the basket of goodies as specified prior. So get to it. Record your MP3 or WAV file and email it or snail mail it to the deadline. All these details will be on the NJGHS.net website. Good luck. Do you have what it takes to be a ghost hunter? Are you fascinated with the paranormal? Then why not take your interest to the next level and join the New Jersey Ghost Hunter Society? For a $20 lifetime membership fee, you'll receive training on our cemetery hunts, get to participate on investigative teams for private investigations, and receive discounts on books we sell. Members also get the reduced rate on special events we offer throughout the year. You can PayPal right from the homepage of www.njghs.net or send your check or money order payable to Ghost Hunters to P.O. Box 8018, Parsippany, New Jersey 07054. Happy haunting.
Hi, this is John Zaffis, author of Shadows of the Dark. Welcome to another evening of Deadline, hosted by New Jersey Ghost Hunters Society. I hope you enjoy the show.
Hey, welcome back. It's time for Parashares. We don't have a Parashare this week.
Deadbeats, deadbeats, deadbeats!
Oh, stop making me laugh. I choked to death. However, I came across a really cool interview I did over a year ago with Jeff Belanger. He's the author of many ghost books. like all the names escape me now. He's going to shoot me. He's like, wah! Well, anyway, he just had a new one come out, Ghosts of War, I believe. And he sent an autographed copy to my son of that. And
thanks, Jeff. Thanks for my copy.
The Haunted Encyclopedia, he wrote. And he is the mayor of GhostVillage.com. And in fact, he was going to be on the Maury Povich show again. And as he was getting ready to tape, call came from his wife that, guess what? We're having a baby. And they had to race him back to the airport, and he had to fly home, and he made it. He made it just in the nick of time. Little Sophie Jane was born at 1:30 a.m. I forget. I want to say March 8th, you know. And anyway, so Jeff made it, you know, just in the nick of time for the birth of his daughter. And it really took everybody by surprise because she was a month early. So congratulations to the Belangers.
So if he's the mayor,
Sophie.
What would that make Sophie?
I don't know, daughter of the mayor. Mayor's daughter. But yeah, so anyway, so it was very exciting. And, you know, and the Maury Povich show is very accommodating and very understanding. And they have said that they like Jeff so much that they're going to try to have him on as a monthly thing. So a month they'll be doing a ghostly paranormal edge to the Maury Povich show, and Jeff Belanger will be on that. So congrats to him.
29 days they're going to do a paternity test in one day, what they're going to do.
Supernatural. Yeah. Yeah. So anyway, so congrats to all of them. That's really good news, and we're very happy. And so, with that said, enjoy this interview with author and mayor of Ghost Village, Jeff Belanger.
Hi, Jeff, and welcome to The Deadline.
Hey, Laura, great to be with you.
Oh, good. I love your site. I mean, it's very comprehensive, and it's up to date, which is great. A lot of sites get stale very quick, and yours is always like the go-to site for me.
Oh, thanks.
And I was just, you know, wondering, like, what fascinates you the most about ghosts and hauntings?
Really the human aspect of it, the people, the living people. That's what's intrigued me from the very beginning. I grew up in an old historic New England town, and I had friends that lived in very old houses, some of them that predated the founding of the United States. And they're very matter-of-fact. They said, you know, my house is haunted. And I said, you're kidding. What does that mean? And they would tell me, well, you know, we've seen a man walking around, or we hear footsteps in the middle of the night and things like that. So it's what intrigues me is that, I've come to the conclusion that ghosts are real, without any doubt. Now, what they are or why they are, I'm still working on that.
Mm-hmm.
But they're definitely real because there's some phenomenon that's happening to millions of people all over the world from all different walks of life, all different belief systems, and they're experiencing something very similar. And that's what's intrigued me. It's a fringe experience, but it's a human experience, and that's what I want to understand.
Right. You know, you make a good point, because I've always noticed that at the NJGHS that we have members that run the whole gamut, whether they're lawyers to homemakers to accountants to police detectives. I mean, and a lot of them show up at a meeting because they've had an experience.
Right.
It's not selective, that's for sure.
No, that's right. Yeah, it doesn't discriminate. And, it's also, as far as a spiritual discussion, it's really intriguing to me because that's what seems to be the most basic building block of spirituality. That's what I've been able to break down kind of all religions to the most basic level is this ghost experience that seems to transcend all of it and could be explained in a lot of religious texts. There's a lot to it that I think, you know, deserves further study.
Definitely. Well, that's what we're all about. I mean, keep trying.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
I mean, I always joke, like, oh, as soon as I get the full body apparition, that's it, I'm done. But I'm sure at that point I'll want more anyway. So.
I mean, as soon as you think you know it all, then you're definitely done. There's no point in continuing. If you think you have all the answers, then I guess just go sit on the mountain and wait for someone to come ask you questions.
Yeah, I mean, have you ever taken any pictures yet, or taken any of like
those? Taken pictures. There's one I took at Disneyland. It was my sister going down the water slide. I took another one on a vacation in Antigua. It's a beautiful sunset.
Uh huh.
Oh, you mean ghosts?
Ghosts, yeah.
Oh God. Oh no, no, never a ghost. No, I've gotten plenty of orbs in my photos. But I don't personally believe those are anything other than lens flare, mainly, and then moisture and dust particles and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
I've spoken to some people that what I think is intriguing about ghosts or spirit photography is that for the people that really do it and get some pretty profound results, it's not just a random scientific clicking away in a haunted location for them. It's an actual spiritual endeavor. It's a means of spirit communication, and the camera is the conduit for it. The camera is the channel. Mm-hmm. The human is the medium, and their intent is to make contact through the picture. And what's interesting with that is some of the ghost hunters cringe at that because you're taking the science out of it again. You're not saying, well, here's a camera, you point it, you take a picture, and something comes up that means something. You have someone whose intent is to capture some phenomena on that camera, on the picture, whether it's digital, whether it's film, and that's really intriguing to me.
Right. It's kind of along those lines of a Ouija board where they argue that it's just your subconscious or higher conscious self that's causing a motor reaction in the hand to make the planchette move. And
maybe, but that's interesting too. You know, that's just as interesting. And one question too is, you know, with spirit photography, is the photographer somehow psychically imprinting something onto the camera.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not a ghost at all, but rather some kind of thought energy that's made it onto film, which, again, that's amazing. I would love to know more about that as well.
I saw a show years ago. It might have been a sightings episode where they had these people using an old... You remember those old Polaroid one-step cameras?
Sure.
And they were in some supposedly haunted house or something, and they were finding they could communicate by asking the question out loud and then snapping off the picture on the one step pointed at a blank wall. But when the picture would develop, the answer would be written as if on a chalkboard in the picture.
Isn't that interesting?
The wall itself was blank, but it would... So you never know. Is it mind over matter? Is it some human, like you said, consciousness that's imprinting it? Who knows?
I don't know, but I think it's an intriguing topic, and I also am a big believer in signs, you know, these signs that mean something to people, where you see something and you say, wow, I think that was a sign from my grandfather who's passed on, or my grandmother, or my dead sister, or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And for some people, the photographs are those signs. So when people come up to me and they show me orbs and they say, I think this is my cousin who's come back to visit and give me a hello, mm-hmm. I just smile and I say, that's great, go with it. I mean, I would never discount someone's sign. That's not for me to determine whether that's valid or not valid. If someone believes that little round ball on a photograph means something beyond just a little round ball in a photograph, that's, you know, go with that. I don't think anyone is ever going to be able to prove you wrong or prove you right, for that matter.
Right.
So at the end of the day, you're just going to have to go with your gut.
Exactly. And, you know, I had that happen where it was one of those out of the mouths of babes situation,
right,
where I had gotten the pictures back from my son's birthday party, and I'm flipping through them, and I saw an orb that's like right where I'm like leaning over him, and we're getting ready to, I had lit the candles on the cake and he's getting ready to blow them out, and there's an orb like right in front of me, like on my hair, and I didn't say anything to him, and I said, oh, here's your pictures. He's looking at them and he goes, hey, look, Grandpa Jack came to my party. And he was like only 7 or 8, you know, enough to know that it was an orb and enough that he assigned an identity, and Grandpa Jack was dead before I even married his father, so the kid never knew him. But
right.
He knew, and it was interesting because that one orb would always show up around my mother-in-law around the holidays and stuff. So we always kind of assigned, like you said, that sign, that identity, that's who it is.
That's right. And you'll never be able to prove that, and no one will ever be able to disprove that.
Mm-hmm.
And I say, you know, if orbs are out there and they keep the discussion going or force people to ask more questions, then hooray for orbs. I mean,
right.
You know, I'm all on board with that.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I know it's a pretty touchy subject today with a lot of the paranormal investigators, but, you know, also a lot of people who are just starting to get into this, or people that just kind of do it, kind of dabble in it, they get orbs, and it forces them to do more. It gets them more intrigued in the notion and seeking out more answers. And again, hooray for orbs. If that's the purpose they serve, as a way to get people into studying this and asking more questions, then bring on the orbs.
Absolutely. So what do you think are the key ingredients or consistencies for haunted areas or houses? Have you noticed any?
Yeah, well, for me, I'm mostly intrigued. If someone tells me, you know, hey, I live in a new development that was built 3 years ago, and we're hearing strange knocks, and I think it's haunted, and the land wasn't of any historical value or anything like that, I'm not really interested in those kind of cases. I'm interested in the ones with a lot of history, with the ones where we usually find tragedy, murders, suicides, wars, battles, these kind of things. Those seem to be the main ingredients for me, anyway, of the places I study. And what's intriguing too is that any kind of phenomenon that's occurring, it always gets the name pinned to it is always the most famous person in history who's ever even been there. So if you've got a little bed and breakfast somewhere in Virginia, and George Washington slept there one night, and only one night, and you've got, of course, the little plaque that says George Washington slept here. And meanwhile, you've got a ghost somewhere. Of course, the people are going to say, oh, that's Washington. Well, you know, like he cares to go back to the place he stayed one night. Even though it could be the garden. gardener who lived there for 10 years and fell off the roof, you know?
Exactly.
It ends up being George Washington. So there's a funny phenomenon that occurs with these kind of things, and it requires a lot of research. You have to do time travel. You have to go back, and you have to understand who was there and why and who died and who was tied to the area. It's a real hands-on history, hands-on spirituality.
Mm-hmm.
That's what intrigues me the most about it.
Yeah, we have a haunted hotspot location here in New Jersey called the Spy House.
Yeah, sure.
And I remember one time, I might have been there on tour or something, and one of the women on the tour was, you know, self-proclaimed psychic, and she kept saying that she sensed the spirit of Abraham Lincoln. And I'm sitting there thinking, oh, now you're stretching it, you know. What would you be doing here? And months later, I was doing some work and helping out with one of the women that would run the tours there. And she came across paperwork, and the curator came across paperwork, I mean, where they found Abraham Lincoln's signature on one of the guest books when it was a tavern. So apparently on his way to Gettysburg, he had stopped there. So the story goes, whether it was Gettysburg or somewhere, but Abraham Lincoln had actually passed through there enough to leave his signature on one of the papers. So the psychic who was picking that up, and I thought it was way out there in left field, was actually correct. So you never know. Who these historical people are passing through things.
Yeah, and Abraham Lincoln is such a tragic story, an entire life of tragedy.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the I'm actually working on a project now on the White House, and so today actually I've spent all day working on Lincoln.
Did you really? In fact, that's funny because I'm going to use a question that for our haunted trivia on the show that I wrote up today, and actually that'll be the answer, but we can say the answer now because by the time your interview airs, people will have already had to answer the question. But, I've always wanted to go. I've been to Washington, D.C., but I've always said I want to take the tour and actually see his room and, you know, could you take some pictures and get in there?
Well, those days are long past. To take the tour, you need to be sponsored by your congressperson. You need 6 months' notice. You're not allowed to bring cameras or recording equipment of any kind. And if your congressperson happens to be a Democrat, you have a 2-to-1 chance of not being able to go during the current administration.
And that's
just how it is. And I can't say if it works that way with Clinton, if Republican Congress people. But then again, they instituted this after September 11th, so it would only be this administration. But who's to say that may very well continue when there's a Democrat president again? But that's just a fact. That's just how it is right now. So it's too bad. And actually, the Lincoln bedroom is not on the tour. That's part of the private residence of the family.
Oh, I figured that.
Yeah, where people aren't allowed. So unfortunately, you're going to have to depend on photos that are available online and, you know, magazines and things like that.
Right.
But the White House is such a great story. There's so much history there. Every single president has stepped foot in it. Washington never lived in it. All the rest have in some capacity.
How much he swept around, there's one he missed.
Yeah, right. Yeah. He gets to sleep everywhere but the White House.
Yeah.
That's true. So, yeah, it's such a great American story and a great American haunt. There's the ghosts abound at the White House.
Yeah, you know, I was just saying to my husband the other night, you know, he was like, oh, you want to take another trip down to Washington, D.C.? And I said, well, how come when we were there, like, I guess it was last year or the year before, how come we didn't take the tour of the White House? I said, that was one of the key things. And he said, are you kidding? Do you know how hard it is to get in there? You have to plan it 6 months in advance, and we only planned the trip like a month in advance. And I said, oh, I didn't realize there were all those constraints to get on a tour, you know. But
yeah, actually, I'm very fortunate. I'm going to be going on the tour Wednesday.
Are you?
Yeah, and actually, I've lined up an interview with one of the people who've worked in the house for many decades, and so we're going to be talking about the ghosts. We'll see how it goes.
Oh, great. Oh, good. I can't wait to hear it. You'll have to tell me all about it when you come out to the conference.
Definitely. No, I'm very glad they're letting me do it. My congressman here in Massachusetts actually worked very hard to make this happen and called in some favors, so I'm very fortunate to be able to go. But also, I mean, I've got a great love of history, and I think it's important that, you know, that we write about this kind of stuff, that we, because, you know, like we've been saying, people can't get to tours like they used to. When I was 10 years old, we went to Washington, D.C. Now, I didn't take the White House tour, but not because I couldn't, but because the line was 3 hours.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the people were just lined up around the corner, and that's how it used to work. You lined up, they took in so many people at a time, next, all day long, through you went, and, you know, that was, the public was just allowed to do that for centuries, ever since the beginning. And
right.
Now things have changed since September 11th, so... It's even more important to write about and document these things because less and less people are going to have the opportunity to go into what really is, you know, I mean, hey, I'm one of the owners of this house.
Yeah.
You know, that guy in the Oval Office is my tenant. And he's only there for a few more years and then someone else is going to be my tenant. And you're tenant too, and I think it's important that everybody remembers that.
Yeah, absolutely. Good point. So... in all your research and everything, have you ever seen a ghost or heard one? I mean, I'm not talking like with your own eyes, your own ears, not
right.
The use of equipment and stuff.
You know, I'd say the closest I've come was in the catacombs of Paris.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really, if you ever have the opportunity, it's really macabre, but it's also beautiful in a very strange way. The catacombs is where they put 60 generations of human bones.
Mm-hmm.
There's millions of bodies down there, and they've been stacked in a very intricate pattern, retaining walls of femurs and arm bones and skulls mixed in, and you walk through it all. It's right there. I mean, you're 30 meters below the city of Paris. It's very quiet. I was there alone.
Ooh.
And there's skulls all around you. I mean, you could touch them. I didn't, because I didn't think that was very respectful, but they're all around you in very... very intricate patterns. And
wow.
When I was down there, it's very low light, it's electric light, and I was the only person at that particular moment. And I kept seeing out of the corner of my eye this kind of dark shadow shooting across the tunnel, and I can tell you the only thing down there that could make a shadow that would move was me. And my shadow was at my feet. I was very conscious of that as I kept seeing this.
So I don't
know what that was. Again, low light, just me, I can't confirm or deny. But at that moment, I kind of believed it was something a little bit more. Although I wasn't scared. I wasn't frightened, and I walked all the way through. I mean, you have to. There's no escape hatch, and once you're in, you go to the end.
Wow. Now, how did you, is this like a tour thing that they have, or did you arrange this ahead of time as well?
It's actually a museum. It's €5, and down you go. It's self-guided. You just walk through. It's about 1.4 kilometers, so, you know, close to a mile.
Mm-hmm.
You walk through the tunnels, and you just see where they've stacked all the various cemeteries that had to be removed as the city of Paris grew and as, you know, people were getting sick and dying. They moved all the bones down there in the limestone tunnels, which is also where they quarried the stone to build most of the city.
Oh.
So it's really beautiful, and it's very quiet and it's very peaceful. And you know, one of the big taboos is to disturb the place of the dead.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, the living will always prevail. You know, if you've got a cemetery and a piece of prime real estate, or if the living are getting sick because the cemetery is literally overflowing with bodies, then the living will prevail and you have to move them. And so you've got generations of people mixed in together. People who may have been very wealthy mixed with people who were probably had nothing at all. And they had to give up their eternal resting place so that the city of Paris could live and grow and expand. And this was, it's like the pattern that they put them into was about the only way that they could show some respect to these people.
Wow, so do you think it has any kind of Black Hope curse kind of ramifications?
I don't know. I don't know about curses. No one ever speaks of curses over there, and it's not really a place that they would say is very haunted. It's just a place of the dead.
Oh.
And I think that's what happens. You know, sometimes people ask, well, why would a cemetery be haunted? If you're dead and you can go anywhere, why on earth would you stick around the cemetery? You know, wouldn't you get, like, floor seats at the Knicks and, you know, things like that? Which, you know, I totally understand. But I think what happens is when the living are in a place of the dead, like a cemetery, like the catacombs, whether you're psychic or not, you're tuning in to the idea. You're tuning into the idea of who those people were, and I think you can't help but feel something.
Now I'm shooting myself. I was supposed to go to Paris last February, and we had to cancel, but... now I know there's something else more up my alley to go see.
Oh, definitely. Yeah, definitely. It's well worth it, and it, you know, it's one of the cheaper museums you can visit over there.
Yeah. Oh, I gotta go. That's so cool. Because I love London. I always have a good time. There's all the neat things to see over there. You know, of course, like the Tower of London, but there's this one museum which is really morbid, but it's fascinating. It's called the London Dungeon.
Yeah, sure. You passed that on the way to the Tower of London.
Yeah, and it's just a dank place with its little wax figures of all disgusting ways of torture and death that they inflicted over the years. But,
right.
Yeah, you know.
Have you seen the Tower of London?
But,
did you get a chance to see the Tower of London as well?
Oh, yeah. I've been there twice, and it's a shame. I kicked myself because both times that I've been to London, I didn't know then what I know now. So here I was standing in a very haunted edifice and no clue, just typical tourist. And I always keep saying I want to go back now as pure ghost hunter and really take advantage of the stuff. So
That's one of my favorite locations. I actually had the opportunity to go there after they were closed after hours.
Oh, wow.
And we saw the changing of the key ceremony at 10 p.m., which is, I was a guest of one of the yeoman warders, you know, the beef eaters, the guys who give the tours and live there. And everybody had a ghost story. It was amazing. I was talking to people who had lived there for 10 years, people who had lived there for 6 months, and everyone had some kind of ghostly tale to tell just from, you know, being at the tower. And at the changing of the key ceremony, this has happened every night at 10 p.m. for the last 700 years, rain or snow, 365 days, and it's where the yeoman warder turn over the tower to the army for a night watch until the morning. And you're all supposed to face a certain direction and watch the keys change hands, and they play the national anthem and things like that. And there's a legend that says Anne Boleyn, one of the wives of Henry VIII, her ghost likes to stand behind the whole thing and watch it happen. So, of course, there's about 25 people facing where we're supposed to be facing, and I'm the only one who's looking over my shoulder behind, you know, looking for Anne Boleyn, but I didn't see her.
Oh, wow. But, you know what, I'm going to have to keep me in mind for next travel. You seem to be a very well-connected person getting in on all these things. So.
Well, you know, I mean, you start writing about it and publishing about it, and, it does start to open some doors for you after a little while, which is nice.
That is nice, because it's quite an opportunity to get to these places and after hours and tours and things.
Yeah, just, you know, start writing books.
I keep saying I have the one I've been working on, and I'll write a chapter, and then I get distracted with things like life and paying bills and working, and you know how that
goes. Yeah.
One of these days, because every conference, I'm like, I'm going to have this book finished by next year's conference, so I can just sell it at the conference and walk away from it, and it's still not done. So,
Yeah, it's a labor of love.
Yeah.
You have to love doing it.
It's like when you plug into it and you get writing, you know, if people leave you alone, it's amazing, and you're in the flow. It's like, boom, there's two chapters done. But how often I know I don't get that time, you know, where the time and the flow sync up concurrently and forget it. So anyway, so in your years of ghost research and writing, what stands out to you as the most remarkable and frightening case, and why is that?
I guess I'd have to go back to the Tower of London, just because there's so much history there. To realize it's close to 1,000 years old. There's parts of the walls that go back to Roman times, which is, you know, thousands of years, and it's got a haunting in every corner. And what's nice too about Europe is they kind of embrace their ghosts more than Americans. I think that's changing, especially up here in the Northeast and in the general northeastern region, where we have buildings that are much older than, say, anything in Texas or anything in, you know, other parts of the country that were just developed decades and even centuries after the original colonies and things like that.
Right.
So I think the older the buildings, ghosts are just kind of more matter of fact. You know, people talk about the subject more, you know, more openly, things like that. So that's one of the charms of the Tower of London, is you can go over and ask about it, and they won't hush you up. They'll say, oh, yes, you know, quite haunted right over here. You know, Anne Boleyn's head came off, and, you know, it's just a matter of fact, which is great. I think it's important to have the discussion. So that's certainly one of my favorite cases, and, you know, the most profound. It's between that and the Catacombs of Paris, just because it's so eerie.
Right.
And it's such a very moving experience to go go through that. It kind of changes you by the time you get through the end of that tunnel. It has to.
Wow. I have to do that. That sounds really interesting. So, yeah, I would love to get back to the Tower of London now with all the gadgetry that I have.
Yeah, and I think, I imagine the Tower would probably let you bring some of that in. You know, if you just went in for the regular tour, I'm sure, you know, they may laugh at you, but I'm sure they wouldn't mind.
Well, I wouldn't be lugging in anything. You know, I mean, I would still look like you. It's basically tourist equipment. I mean,
sure.
Everybody has a digital camera and
that's right.
And a camcorder to do EVPs and catch video on. So you would just blend, basically.
Yeah, there you go.
They wouldn't even know. I mean, I know you can't film anything around the crown jewels, which for security reasons that's understandable. But
right.
And those are stunning. I remember, like, at some point I was thinking, my God, you need sunglasses to look at these things. They're just so amazing.
Yeah. It's a real treasure. But, you know, the other thing, too, is there's treasures, there's historical treasures in every town, every city, every state, you know, in your own backyard. And I think that's one of the great things about paranormal investigation is that people can get into it on such a local level.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you don't need to go to Europe. You don't need to go to London. You don't need to go to Paris. You can go to, you know, your little town. Just start asking around. There's historical societies, libraries, museums, a lot of places that have reputations. And I think that's where a lot of this is moving. You know, the famous places have been written about so many times. The Tower of London's ghosts have been written about. I mean, you could fill a library with how many times the Tower of London's ghosts have been written about.
Mm-hmm.
But how many times have they written about the ghosts in your town? You know? Possibly never, which means it's new ground, ready for breaking. And I think that's what's great about this movement, for lack of a better word. I think paranormal investigators are popping up everywhere, and it's a great thing. And I just hope we can continue to share information and have the discussion, because there's a lot of great work to be done in every neighborhood, every town, everywhere.
That's why I love, you know, your book, Encyclopedia of Haunted Places, the Ghostly Locales from Around the World. That basically encapsulates what you were just saying.
That's right.
It's great that people, you know, people like me had some place to put some stories that were in our backyard, and then I have the book, and, you know, you sent me the copy of it, and thank you for that.
Yeah, no, my pleasure. Thanks for being a part of it.
And I love looking through it, and because, you know, yeah, all right, there's my story, no big deal, but then I get to read all these other stories.
That's right.
And some of the names of people I recognize. Most of them I don't, and but then it's so cool to say, wow, they're getting to read about this little town in New Jersey, but I'm getting to read about this little town over in Ireland, and you know,
yeah, that's right, yeah,
great book.
That was the goal, and we had 100 contributors to that book, 100 different people worked
wow.
on it, which was fantastic. I mean, because you know, you're in this field too, you know how catty some groups can be. You know, people get very territorial, they get very egocentric about some of this stuff, and it's nice sometimes just to remind everyone that, you know, you can put these things aside.
Yeah, absolutely.
Find some common ground. So
it's like, not like the ghost gives a crap how big your organization is.
Yeah, right. Or you know. Yeah, I mean, it's such a wide open field, and it's still so new. There's still so much that we're all going to be able to contribute, and there's so much room to grow, and you know, so much to learn. And I think it's just such a great time to be doing this work.
Exactly. I think that's why I love it, because I know personally, once I learn something, I'm bored of it. So this field, I'm nowhere near, you know, like you said, having all the answers, and so it's an ongoing work in progress or learning project. So for me, that's why I guess it holds my attention. You know.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, you'll never know it all, and if someone says they have the answers, then they're trying to sell you something.
Yeah.
So buyer beware.
Exactly. So you know, I know I don't want to take too much more of your time. I really appreciate it. I just wanted to ask you, and you're in Massachusetts.
Yep.
And what do you find are your favorite haunted locations that are in your backyard of Massachusetts?
You know, I've only lived here for a few years. I've kind of moved around, and I end up looking into places everywhere but my own backyard. Which is pretty funny, I know. But there are a few places close by. There's a place called Stone's Public House in Ashland, which goes back to the mid-1800s, and it's a nice restaurant, but it's preserved. It looks like, you know, when you step inside, it looks like you're stepping back in time.
Oh, nice.
And there's quite a few ghostly legends there. There's John Stone, who was the building's named after the original owner. He built a hotel in Ashland because he heard that the Boston-Albany Railway was coming in. So there'd be a lot of traffic. There'd be a lot of people coming into town via the new rail station. So he put up this hotel, and early on in the first few decades of operation, a gentleman, traveling salesman, came in from New York and got into a poker game and started winning a lot from the locals, and there were some accusations of cheating, and so they went up to his room to try to knock him out and take their money back, but they ended up killing him. And one story says he's buried in the basement, and I've been in the basement. It's a dirt floor basement, so conceivably it's possible, though really not likely. And another story says that they just took the body away and disposed of it somewhere, which is a lot more likely.
Mm-hmm.
So it's thought to be haunted by Stone, by the traveling salesman, but there's also the story of a little girl who, in the late 1800s, in the police reports, it says she was killed by a car. But at that point, the only car would have been a rail car, which the tracks are literally 100 feet from Stone's public house. From the corner of the building, you could spit on an oncoming train.
Wow.
And people have been killed there in modern times as well. It's a dangerous intersection. And a little girl was struck by a train and brought into the house to try to save her, but they lost her inside. And a lot of people report seeing the figure of a girl looking out the back window of the second floor, which is really a storage area.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's also the story of a dress in the attic. They said that the little girl's dress, bloodstained dress, is the only thing in the attic. Now, the first time I went there, the other owner wouldn't let me go up there because it's kind of dangerous. But the current owner was a little more giving. And I did go up there, and the only thing in the attic is a very old stained dress right in the middle. And I took pictures of it. I looked at it. Now, whether it's bloodstained, I couldn't tell you. Whether it belonged to this little girl, I don't know. But it is old, and it's the only thing that's up there. And I was told by the previous owner that one of the managers took the dress home because she's just some kind of macabre souvenir. And she said all hell broke loose in her house. She was hearing voices, hearing knocking, hearing murmurs, things like that. She put it in her car. She was hearing knocks in her trunk. So she gave it to her boyfriend. He was hearing the same thing. She finally brought it back to the old owner and said, look, I know I wasn't supposed to go in the attic. I know I wasn't supposed to touch this, but I did. I need to put it back.
Wow.
And she did. She went up and put it back, and it's still there today. So it's a very intriguing historical haunt.
And what town was that in?
That's in Ashland, Massachusetts, which actually the Boston Marathon used to start in Ashland. That's where it used to begin. So to give you an idea, it's 26 miles from Boston.
Okay.
So it's that's where the marathon used to start. Now it starts a town away, but for a long time that's where it began.
Wow, then I'm going to take another trip up to Boston, Salem, and then find this place.
Yeah, come on up. Yeah, it's
Is it a restaurant?
It's a restaurant, yep. It's not an inn anymore. It's just a restaurant and a bar.
Oh.
But yeah, so it's a great place tucked away in Ashland. But recently, this past Halloween, I was asked to go around, and there's a place called the Bellingham Historical Society, which is the town I live in.
Mm-hmm.
And it's actually the Historical Commission, excuse me, they've corrected me a number of times on that.
Yeah, that's right now.
It's a commission, it's not a society. It's in a tiny little building. The building can't be more than 20 feet by, say, 50 feet. And it used to be the library, the Bellingham Library, way back when. And it's supposed to be haunted by an old librarian. Now, they're a little more tight-lipped about it, so I didn't get a whole lot of information, but I did go in with a psychic who was part of this whole operation, and she said she was getting feelings around the building. That one kind of deserves further study, but I don't know. You know, when the people who are in charge of the building aren't very receptive to this kind of thing, it makes an investigation very difficult.
Yeah, it does.
You know, and so part of it, you have to say to yourself, is it worth my time to keep pushing this, or am I, you know, is it better for me to just move on to other things and, you know, just let this one go?
The historical societies are tough. I have, you know, it's a shame they have the history stuff, but they're not very forthcoming when it comes to doing any of the paranormal research.
Yeah, there are a few that are. There are a few that recognize, hey, whatever gets people interested in history, be it ghosts or be it, you know, battlefields, we're on board. And I think those are the more progressive ones.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we're working on it. I think, you know, the one here in town is a little bit know, they'll talk about it. As long as you want to talk about the real town history and you want to talk about artifacts and what took place here, you know, it's okay. They're on board, and they're willing to tolerate a few questions about the ghosts.
Mm-hmm.
But I've spoken to other groups, for example, up at the Dean House in Fort Calgary in Alberta, Canada.
Right.
It's one of these living museums, you know, where they have people dressed in period costumes, and you bring school groups in, and they talk to you like it's, you know, 1875 and, instead of, you know, 2006. And it's got a very haunted reputation, and I spoke to the curator up there who said the school children were inundating them with so many questions about the ghosts that finally they had to incorporate the ghosts as part of the tour. And they just said, you know, we give up. We'll talk about the ghosts. But what they do is they tell the kids, we'll talk about the ghosts at the end. So you have to listen and be good through the whole tour, or we won't talk about the ghosts. That's the reward. And they said, it's working out. It's getting kids interested in history. So, you know, again, another great service of our ghostly spirit friends.
From marketing to bed and breakfast sales.
That's right. Oh, gosh, they're good for business. They promote discussion of bigger things, and they force you to appreciate history. I mean, what's not to love?
Yeah, I mean, think even a realtor, if you're trying to sell your house and you got really bad plumbing, oh, that's the ghost.
Yeah, right, yeah.
Never mind a trip to Lowe's. No, it's just the ghost.
That's right, yeah, it becomes a feature.
Yeah. Well, Jeff, thank you so much for taking time to speak with me this afternoon. I really appreciate it. And for people listening, you definitely want to check out ghostvillage.com. That's Jeff Belanger's site. And his books, The World's Most Haunted Places and Communicating with the Dead, Reach Beyond the Grave, Encyclopedia of Haunted Places, and The Nightmare Encyclopedia, Your Darkest Dreams Interpreted. That one I got to get. I don't have that in my collection.
Yeah, that one just came out back in late November, so.
Okay.
That's yeah, there's still time, and there's more coming in 2006.
That's great. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Laura. I appreciate it.
Okay, have a good one.
You too.
All right, bye.
If you're ready to take your ghost hunting to the next level, you're ready to be a certified paranormal investigator by the New Jersey Ghost Hunters Society. The certification includes 4 hours of hands-on, concentrated training by the NJGHS leaders at the most haunted prison in the United States, Eastern State Penitentiary, located in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. To participate, you must have all of your own equipment. Register online at the NJGHS.net website's certification page. Costs are $125 for current members and $145 for non-members of the NJGHS who will receive their membership going forward. PayPal, MasterCard, and Visa are accepted. Upon completion of the course, submission of your report of findings, and achieving a total point score of 80 or better, you will receive your certificate and new certified paranormal investigator card from the NJGHS. All the details are on the certification page of the NJGHS.net website. So what are you waiting for? Take your hobby seriously. Become a certified paranormal investigator.
The largest and most comprehensive ghost conference the paranormal world has ever seen is coming in Gettysburg, July 20th to 22nd, 2007, at the newly constructed Wyndham Gettysburg Hotel and Conference Center. At this supernatural summit, it will be close to 3,000 square feet of space, where the paranormal community will come together toward excellence in the field of study, as well as establish standards and protocols in the science of supernatural research. Best-selling authors and paranormal presenters include John Zaffis, Mark Skuerman, Mark Moran, Jeff Belanger, Charles Ammons III, Troy Taylor, and Vince Wilson. Special event co-hosts will be none other than Mark Nesbitt, author of the Ghost of Gettysburg series. Ghost hunters, be prepared to shop the largest paranormal trade show with vendors of ghost hunting gear, authors and books, and other fascinating otherworldly goods. Register for one of the intensive workshops, take a ghost tour with Mark Nesbitt aboard a train, or tune into the dead with Jane Doherty, psychic medium. All details are at the Ghost World Conference website at www.ghostworldconference.com. Register online at the site www.ghostworldconference.com with PayPal, Visa, MasterCard, or e-check. Group discounts available for groups of 10 or more. Please email info@ghostworldconference.com for details. All sales are final. Ghost World Conference is a production of Ghost World LLC with sponsorship by X Zone Radio.
Hi, welcome back to The Deadline. It is time for Haunted Trivia. Now, last week you asked, what is the name of the castle that the Radiant Boy Ghost appeared in 1803 in England? The answer, Corby Castle, located in Cumberland, England. Now, this week's Haunted Trivia has a skill level of fairly easy. March 21st, which has just passed, is the anniversary of the death of the now annual apparition of the Headless Motorcycle Rider. It is said that a young soldier bought a motorcycle to impress his girlfriend upon his return from being discharged from serving in World War I. He arrived at her farm to be shocked and dismayed that she had become engaged to another man. He took off at a high speed from her farm and lost control of the bike on a curve just before the bridge. His decapitated body and motorcycle plunged into the ravine below. His apparition appears as a speeding headlight cruising quickly down the road and vanishing halfway across the bridge. To this day, on the March 21st anniversary, people try to summon the biker by flashing their headlights 3 times at the bridge or honking their car horn 3 times. What town and state does this phantom motorcyclist ride on March 21st? Be the first person to email the correct town and state to hauntedtrivia@njghs.net, and you'll win the Junior Ghost Hunters t-shirt. Pretty cool, huh?
Nice. About to say Ghost Rider.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think the other part of the story is not only did his head get lopped off, but the headlight of the motorcycle was lopped off. And they think that's why you see just the speeding headlight. You don't really see the whole motorcycle.
Very cool.
Yeah. So, anyway, I should remind people again that Ghost World Conference is a registration price of $130 per person, but the buddy rate is still in effect at $85 if you're a New Jersey Ghost Hunter Society member. That's good until April 30th, so you have to email me, laurah@njghs.net, for the private link. Don't forget, after June 15th, if you want to attend Ghost World Conference, you will not be able to register online at that point. You will have to just take your chances and pay at the door, which the at-the-door price will be $150. So I can't encourage you enough to register now.
Now.
Yeah.
Do it.
And it's booking up. I'm so psyched. We are going to have probably the single largest paranormal conference to date.
Ever.
Yeah.
In the history of the world.
Oh, yeah. What's that guy's name? The one who did Darth Vader's voice.
James Earl Jones.
Yeah, where is he when you need him for a voiceover? Damn it. That would have sounded
in the history of the world.
If I keep coughing the way I am, I'm going to have, No, you know what? I'm heading more towards the raspy Brenda Vaccaro thing at this point. It's just really... You know that Bob Rivers song? My glands are puffed and swollen in every hour I pee. It's true. When you have one of these things, you do pee every hour.
Moving on.
Oh, well. So, stay tuned to the njghs.net website and sign up for the Yahoo groups to get the latest and greatest information. Thanks again to Brian Sant, the NJGHS technician and producer of The Deadline.
Hail to the King.
And our team leaders, Gregory and Sherry Irish and Laura Lindemann. Shout out to Don Slepian of DonSlepian.com, who composed and recorded our theme song for The Deadline, now titled Dance of the Dead. And of course, thanks to you for listening. Keep downloading the shows weekly, because at some point in life, you have to meet The Deadline.